All right, welcome back to the Restless Nomads Radio Show. Mike here with you. Hey, visit goldcountryradio.org. That's the radio station website where this show is featured and aired live originally. That's goldcountryradio.org. You can click on featured shows, and then you'll see the Restless Nomads Radio Show under that tab, as well as all of the other community shows, Make It Out Alive with Sam Wilson, Terrible at Fishing with Michael Ruffino, and the Life Outdoors Radio Show. That's a hunting Southern Oregon radio show with Nate Bailey. All right, time for the RV pro tip. Always have a backup plan when it comes to reservations. Before heading to a new destination, especially if it's far away, always research a backup spot just in case your campground is full or you get double booked or something like that, especially if you're going up there and you're relying on first come, first serve, and you plan on showing up later in the day. Holy smokes, especially if it's a weekend. We worked a season at Lake Cochise in Washington, and they didn't allow anyone into the campground before 2 o'clock. And there were literally hundreds of cars lined up all looking for a campsite by 1:45 in the afternoon. And they were just lined up outside the campground waiting to get in. And, you know, of course, the people in the back of the line, oftentimes we had to turn them away because the campground was full at that point. And there was just no more sites available. So having a backup site, even if it's a Walmart or a Cracker Barrel or a truck stop, maybe some public land nearby, having that plan B is going to save you a lot of stress. One of the things that you can always do when it comes to reservations, let's say you're wanting to go to the Oregon coast in the summertime and you can't get a reservation. Well, if you're, say you're camping over on some public land in Central Oregon or something, you can check for last minute cancellations because so many people change their plans all the time and those cancellations will pop up. Be in contact with the campground if you can over the phone. That's probably the best way. Otherwise, you're kind of relying on the internet and hitting that refresh screen, refreshing the screen, looking for those cancellations. Now, let's get into some nightmares of last-minute reservations. If you're a weekend warrior, no big deal, right? If you go to make a reservation and you find that the campground is full, well, no big deal. You just enjoy the air conditioning that weekend and you stay inside and stay home, or you look elsewhere, right? Somewhere relatively close to home. Now, if you're full-time RVing and you're staying in a Walmart parking lot and they give you 12 hours to stay there and then you have to move on, that can be a little bit frustrating if you are trying to find your next place to go and everything you're looking at is booked. So it's really important to plan ahead, especially for popular areas. If you're near national parks and things like that, these places sell out so fast. You got to book well in advance. And what I usually do when I'm kind of planning our itinerary, our trip, I look at the most popular places that we're passing through and we want to stay in. I book those first. And because you kind of have to have some flexibility with dates. So book the hardest to get ones first and then book the easier ones around that. That's a little pro tip for you. Just a sideline mention here. February 2025, I went to book a site at Silver Falls State Park in Oregon, which is just east of Salem. And it's pretty popular. February. They were already sold out, couldn't get one night in July. That's how bad it is sometimes. Okay, so when you're looking for these backup sites, good idea to be looking at public land and be able to boondock if you have to. Now, in the dead of summer, if you don't have a generator or you don't have enough battery bank to run the air conditioner, that can be a huge consideration, right? I know in the summertime, we like our 30-amp power because we want that air conditioning going. But public land, BLM, National Forest, all the ones that allow you to stay do what they call dispersed camping. And you also have to think about accessibility when it comes to getting an RV in there. You want to be looking at the satellite views on Google Maps and making sure, hey, is this even going to be feasible? Because a lot of public land has dispersed camping allowed for up to 14 days, but maybe you can't even get into that area to camp. Now, typically with public land, a good rule of thumb is if you don't see any signs saying no camping, you're allowed to stay there. Do your research, but typically the length of stay is limited to 14 days, which is pretty generous. You can also look at Google Maps or RV Trip Wizards or Allstays or one of the many apps and look for other places in the area, call around, see if they have any availability, should your first option not work out. So one of the biggest downsides to full-time RVing is that you don't have a permanent home. If you're not a hybrid person, but you're actually on the road and that is 100% full-time your home. Now, things that happen, if your RV gets stolen, that's one of the worst things, right? It breaks down, or maybe it burns to the ground. It's going to leave you in a situation where you're scrambling for shelter. So, again, that emergency fund for situations just like that, very important. And I'll hit it again, really good RV insurance, not expensive. You should get the maximum coverage you can. And then also consider having a storage unit or a home base to keep some valuables. Another solution to this, if you're full-time RVing, especially with documents, they sell, you can either get like a fire safe, which is a good thing to have, and you can keep your passports and your birth certificate, social security cards, that kind of thing in the fire safe. Those are kind of bulky and, you know, if it's, you don't want something huge for an RV, you don't want anything very heavy. So they sell these fireproof bags. My wife and I bought one of those, and it's just like this document bag that's fireproof, and it's rated, you know, it can burn for an hour or something like that. But have that, buy one of those bags with all your documents in it and have it in a place where you can grab it and get out the door and make that a part of your egress strategy. Grab your paperwork as you make your way out the door. If at all possible, keep it in a location where it's easy to grab. Maybe not for a visitor, but somewhere where you know you can get to it quick and get out a window or a door if something should happen. Let's talk a little bit about things that can drain your bank account if you're full-time RVing, especially if you're brand new to it. So most people don't even think about the cost of movement. Gasoline is expensive. RVs are typically not efficient. So think about that. And maybe you're getting on line and you're planning out your first maiden voyage and you have a plan to drive 300 miles every day, 400 miles every day, and you're going to stay in a different RV park. Things are going to rack up pretty quick because you're paying a lot of money in gas. So you need to be cognizant of that. Not only does that add a lot of stress, because driving an RV, any kind of RV, is nowhere near as relaxing as driving your Honda Civic down the road. It can be a little bit stressful. Now, there is the rule of threes. My wife and I have kind of adopted this, and typically, here's the rule of threes. We won't travel any more than 3 hours on a travel day, typically. Now, we make some exceptions, especially for the last leg on the way home. Usually, that'll be a little bit longer because we're motivated to get home, so not that big of a deal. Maximum 3 hours drive time or 300 miles. And this is totally personal preference, but it works. If you follow this rule, you'll find that there'll be a lot less stress and you'll enjoy your time a lot more. And then when you get where you're going, don't move for 3 days. So 3 hours, 300 miles, and 3 days of rest in between travel days makes for much easier. And that's 3 days minimum of rest between travel days, makes for much more enjoyable and easier RVing trips, if you ask me and many others. I'm not the inventor of the rule of threes. I got that from other folks on YouTube. Now, another big pitfall that most new full-timers have, especially if they're going to be on the road for extended period of time, you know, even if you're a hybrid, you own a home, but you're going to be out for a couple months on a trip, or if you buy an RV, sell your home, and you're going to be out there 100% of the time, you want to avoid being in the vacation mindset. And I say this, but I know that each and every person is going to go through some degree of this before they figure it out. They have to experience it. But a lot of RVers burn through their savings quickly because it feels like a vacation, right? When you're traveling and you're excited, you're going to go eat out a lot. You're going to be buying all kinds of souvenirs because you're excited about all the new places that you're seeing. It's natural. This is your new normal, though. It's not going to be a vacation. The sooner that you shift to a budget conscious, sustainable travel style, the better. Now let's talk about some stays that may be a little easier on your wallet. So we did an episode on the Thousand Trails membership that offers long-term stays for pretty affordable, especially if you are full-time or going to be traveling extensively. Compared to regular RV parks, and I did a budget breakdown, how much it would cost per night on a certain trip using our Thousand Trails membership, it can be a great option. One of the things that a lot of people enjoy doing, and my wife and I are not quite like this, but a lot of people love it, is boondocking on public lands. That's free, but you don't have any hookups. And generally, even if you do have a good solar system and a good battery bank, or you're running generators and you got plenty of fuel, you have some limitations, mainly water, where are you getting your water, because you can only take so much out with you. Also gasoline for the generators. And then the biggest and probably the one that runs out the fastest is your black tank. When that black tank is full, where are you going to dump it? That is more than likely going to be your time of stay limitation, the one thing that makes you move on to go find a dump station. Now, another great way to save money if you're a full-timer and even make money is by work camping, and we did an episode on that too. You can stay an entire season at a campground and get paid to clean bathrooms and check people in and collect camping fees and so forth. And we discussed in that episode the two models here. Some work camping jobs are volunteer only, so you just get your space, and some are paid. I would encourage you never to accept a volunteer position without hookups, because that is a really bad deal. And the more people that accept those, it's communicating to places that hire these folks that is acceptable, and it simply is not. If there are no hookups, they aren't bringing anything to the table other than a parking spot, you should not be volunteering there. Otherwise, you're really making it more difficult for everyone else involved. In fact, I have a bit of an issue with volunteer programs, period. Hey, if it works for you, then great. I don't take the jobs because I think that we bring value to the table as work campers, and it should be compensated. The more people that accept volunteer positions, the more these folks that hire these people are going to see that and go, oh, we can do this on a volunteer basis. Let's get rid of the paying positions. And that is going to be bad for a lot of work campers in the long run. Now, sometimes volunteering can be okay if everything else is to your expectation. Like the Oregon State Parks, when you volunteer, you're not required to do heavy lifting and cleaning bathrooms and things, and they only ask for a commitment of 1 month at a time. That seems like a pretty good deal. But if an organization wants you to volunteer 40 hours a week to clean crappy bathrooms and spend 6 months there doing that, and all they're going to provide you is a parking space without any hookups, You are getting screwed, my friends. Okay, we have to address this. One of the biggest problems with full-time RV living is the homelessness stigma. Just because you live in an RV doesn't necessarily mean you're homeless. Now, it really gets down to semantics. How do you define homeless, right? But typically, the stigma of homelessness is associated with drug use, mental illness, unhygienic living conditions, that kind of thing. Now, let's be real. There are full-time RVers struggling with homelessness. I think it's a separate symptom of a bigger issue. But then you have full-time RVers that work every day remotely, retirees. You have adventurous families living that way by choice. And I think that's a huge factor. You know, are they doing it by choice? Are they traveling by choice, and are they going and seeing exciting new places, or are they traveling in a less than maintained motorhome or travel trailer and getting kicked out of parking lots? That'll kind of tell you which one you are, you know, if you're thinking about this. Now, part of the stigma comes from some terribly irresponsible RVers that are ruining camping for everyone else. Some RVers will go out and camp on public land. Usually the 14-day max, they are well over that when they go. They try to live out there on public land, and they usually trash sites. They ignore all the stay limits. They ignore all the rules. They're out there doing drugs. They're painting a very bad picture of what it means to be a full-time RVer. The worst thing that I have seen, and this happens more often than I like to admit, these same folks, let's just call them the trashy folks, right? The irresponsible folks, have been caught dumping black tanks on public land, right in the campsite, sometimes without a stinky slinky or a sewer hose connected. They just pull the valve and let it rip, and they dump all of that human waste right in the campsite. The reckless behavior like this is what leads to campground closures, national forest closures to camping. BLM takes a look at it, and they say, nope, this is costing us too much money to send people out to clean up after these guys, so we're just going to do away with it altogether. So when you see this kind of thing, it's a good idea to report it. Many people that go out and boondock on these public lands actually take a trash bag and litter pickers and clean up. Unfortunately, I mean, it shouldn't be your responsibility, but if you don't do it, if we don't do it as a responsible public, then these irresponsible people will likely drive our government agencies to close these things down and make it unavailable for the rest of us for good. So to protect free camping, they're out there cleaning up these irresponsible people's trash. We need to take care of these places. It's the only way to maintain our continued use of them. Well, hey guys, that wraps up this episode of The Restless Nomads. Do you full-time RV? What are your biggest struggles and best tips? Just log on to therestlessnomads.com. Drop us a message. Let us know. I'm curious to hear from other folks, and looking forward to maybe doing some interviews in future podcasts from full-time RVers. Hey, we've got some exciting news. We will be hosting the Crescent Lake Campground this season. So if you are in the area this summer, stop by and say hello to the Restless Nomads, your hosts, Mike and Angie. Well, until next time, everybody, stay safe. Happy camping. We'll see you on the next episode of the Restless Nomads Radio Show.